This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Deeply in this country, I think almost everybody does believe in God.
That was Barbara Walters talking on her TV show, The View, May 20th. Well, we have news for you, Barbara. The fastest growing segment of the U.S. population in regards to religion is those of us who do not believe in a God. And I'm one of them, Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio, the only nationally syndicated radio show devoted to the views of atheists and agnostics and other free thinkers, and to debunking the myth that almost everybody believes in a God.
Barbara Walters said almost everybody. That means she acknowledges that there's a couple little of us huddled in the corner, quietly not believing in God. Actually, 15 or 20% of us who are non-religious. I'm Dan Barker. I'm here with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and I'm your friendly neighborhood atheist. This show is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We work to keep state and church separate, and to be a voice for those of us who are free from religion.
And we have a lot of news to comment on this week.
And then on the second half of the show, we'll be talking to one of my favorite heathens, a friend of mine. We call him Heathen Stephen, Steve Benson, who's the blasphemous, and he takes that as a compliment. He's the blasphemous cartoonist for the Arizona Republic. He's the grandson of the Mormon prophet, Ezra Taft Benson. And Steve created quite a stir when he left the Mormon church in the early 90s and became an atheist. Steve and I will be teaming up for a reprise of our irreverent review, Tunes and Tunes, that's T-U-N-E-S and T-O-O-N-S, where we combine my musical tunes with Steve's cartoons for the annual 4th of July Freethought Gala, which is put on by the Alabama Freethought Association, a chapter of the Freedom From Religion Foundation at Lake Hypatia. Can you spell that word for our listeners?
Hypatia. It's the woman who was torn into pieces by Christians in Alexandria in the 4th century. H-Y-P-A-T-I-A.
Lake Hypatia, where we'll be doing the show on the 4th of July in Alabama. You can find out more about that if you register at our website at ffrf.org/Lake Hypatia.
And where to begin this week? It has been an event-filled week and a disappointing week for supporters of marriage equality, with the expected ruling by the California Supreme Court propping up Proposition 8.
But saying in their decision that the 18,000 same-sex couples who were married in California between June of last year and Election Day of last November, they will stay married. I'm sure you saw all the fanatical Christian right protesters on the news with their Repent Sinners signs out there celebrating this recent ruling.
And this is a moment where it's worth repeating that the only organized opposition to gay rights and marriage equality are church denominations: Catholic, evangelical, and fundamentalist Protestant churches, Mormons, and religious right organizations. And that's why separation of church and state is so imperative in this country. Let's keep religious dogma out of our laws.
And talking about the problem of religious lobbies affecting our laws, there's been a landmark conviction here in Wisconsin in this past week, a welcome conviction of a Wisconsin mother who allowed her young daughter to die of untreated diabetes.
Leilani Newman from the town of Weston, Wisconsin, was convicted on May 26th of second-degree reckless homicide in connection with the Easter 2008 death of her 11-year-old daughter, Madeline, known as Cara. Newman was totally unrepentant after this trial. Her husband will be going on trial soon. And she released a statement saying, "I didn't realize it would be a crime to pray for my daughter." She also said, "The real issue is our local and national government is turning more and more anti-God.
Instead of taking her to the doctor or calling for help, they just pray. They just left her there to die. It's unbelievable. Her daughter is dead. They watched her helpless daughter get sicker and sicker for months. And why? Let's listen to some of the testimony from this trial. First, we have a friend of theirs, Randall Wormgoor, who's Newman's former business partner, providing a little bit of insight into this family's compassion for the ill.
My understanding of their teaching was that any time you or a person was sick, it was a result of direct sin in your life.
It's a result of great sin in your life. In other words, the little girl was a sinner, and that's why she was sick. And then Althea Wormgoor, who was the mother's former Bible study partner, said this.
I strongly believe, yes, God does answer prayer, and yes, God can heal someone if he chooses to, absolutely. Well, God is God, and yes, he can.
Yeah, and here's he didn't heal too well here. And here's some questioning of Kara's older sister during the trial.
When was the first time that you thought she was sick?
Well, I never thought that she was sick, but maybe that Saturday night.
Do you feel that the right thing was done for Kara by praying over her rather than taking her to the hospital?
Yes.
Why?
Because God created everyone, and how can we be more powerful than God?
That's the 16-year-old sister of the 11-year-old girl who died because her parents prayed. Obviously, nothing fails like prayer. Untreated diabetes was much more powerful than God. The sister, of course, was referring to her younger sister.
And there's some pretty chilling testimony again by the mother's friend, Althea Wormgoor, talking about what happened on that Easter morning a year ago when Kara died.
Everything happened at once. I'm not sure how it happened. We all started running around. Some people were crying. Some people were praying. Some people were screaming. I was screaming. Put her hands in the air and, oh, Lord, you can heal diabetes and you can heal cancer. And then she said, I am prophesying that God is going to bring her back from this coma. When you're sick, you're sinning. That didn't seem right. They focused a lot on demons. When Luke was sick and throwing up, demons were leaving him in his throw up.
Luke was one of the brothers, so this is there more than one child in his family.
And they're taking the Bible literally. The Bible says the prayer of faith will save and will heal the sick. So there's a mental delusion there when they think just praying words over a sick person is going to make a difference.
And here she had untreated diabetes, so easy to treat, and they said if they had brought her right until the very end, I mean, she was on death's door, they would have been able to revive her with insulin. This is a landmark case because the Christian Science Lobby has managed to get exemptions in most states passed so that parents who believe in faith healing are not held accountable for the deaths of children when the parents don't seek reasonable medical care. And I don't favor locking people up who are not a threat to society, but this woman is still a threat to her living children, as you heard. There needs to be at least court-ordered medical care required here minimally.
In this past week, we did see in a related story the return of a 13-year-old boy suffering from Hodgkin's disease to his Minnesota home. A judge ordered chemotherapy for Daniel Hauser, but ruled he can stay with his parents in Minnesota. The mother had fled the state but came back. The parents were following the so-called natural healing practices suggested by a religious group called the Nemenha Band. So it looks like this teenager, unlike Kara Newman, will have the health care he needs and deserve. So maybe the tide is turning in faith healing cases.
And other big news in the past week include the Ryan Report. This is 2,500 pages. I have to admit I haven't read most of it yet. Released by the Commission to Inquire into Child Abuse in Ireland. This report was nearly 10 years in the making. It was spurred on by a documentary released in the year 2000. And it examines institutional abuse of children in Ireland from the 1930s to the 1970s. All at the hands of the Roman Catholic Church, because they ran more than 250 such institutions. Up to 35,000 kids were placed in these institutions. They were often forcibly removed from their homes because their mothers were not married or the families were too poor. And nearly 2,000 former residents of industrial schools, reformatories, and orphanages gave testimony to the physical, mental, and sexual abuse they suffered.
That report found that rape and sexual molestation were endemic. That's in quotes. They were endemic in Irish Catholic church-run institutions, and that Catholic priests and nuns terrorized thousands of boys and girls in the Irish Republic for many decades, while government inspectors failed to stop the chronic beatings, the rape, and the humiliation. Now, let's listen to one of these Irish victims, the voice that was suppressed for decades, one man, Michael Creer, a former mayor at a public hearing on May 25th, speaking to party officials of the Fianna Fáil.
I went to the Lafay Commission, and you had seven barristers there questioning me and telling them I was telling lies when I told them that I got raped of a Saturday, got a merciful beating after it, and then stopped. He came along the following morning and put Holy Communion in my mouth. You don't know what happened there. You haven't the foggiest. You're talking through your hat there, and you're talking to a Fianna Fáil man, a former councillor, a former mayor. You're talking to that. What tooth and nail for you for the party that you're talking about now? You didn't do it right. You got it wrong. Admit it, and apologise for doing that, because you don't know what I feel inside me. You don't know the hurt I am.
This man gave his testimony before the report was released, and what's so tragic is that he's talking about the humiliation he endured just to give evidence to the commission, and you'll note he talks about the role of the Vatican.
Seven barristers throwing questions at us, non-stop. I attempted to commit suicide. There's the woman who saved me from committing suicide on my way down from Dublin after spending 5 days at the commission. 5 days I spent at the commission. They brought a man over from Rome, 90-odd years of age, to tell me I was telling lies, that I wasn't beaten for an hour, non-stop, by two of them. By two of them, non-stop, from head to toe, without a shred of cloth on my body. My God, minister.
Well, here's some, this is very heartbreaking testimony. We had to beep out part of the next, but I think you'll get the idea.
That woman will tell you how many times I jump out of the bed at night with the sweat pumping out of me, because I see these fellas at the end of the bed with their fingers doing that to me and pulling me into the room to rape me, to bugger me, and beat the shit out of me.
And here we get to the heart of what's wrong in Ireland, which was the lack of separation between government and the Catholic Church. Our brave testifier here, whose seven brothers and sisters all ended up with him in these institutions, points to the solution.
These people would gladly say yes to a constitution to freeze the funds of the religious order. This state, this country of ours, will say yes to that constitution if you have to change it.
There's a great deal of anger. The government announced it will not reveal more names of any of the perpetrators. A second long-awaited report on priest abuse, 500 priests in Dublin alone from 75 to 2004. The government offered compensation to victims of child abuse, expected to cost $1.5 billion, based on just 10,000 out of 150,000 victims. Irish taxpayers to be burdened with this instead of the Catholic Church. So there will be more fireworks to come over the church scandals in the Irish Republic.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. Coming up, our take on the new Supreme Court nominee and an interview with our favorite heathen, Steve Benson, ex-Mormon, now atheist and cartoonist for the Arizona Republic.
Hi, my name is Jerry Hedrick from Eagan, Minnesota, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
That's Carlos Gardel singing Sonia, Sonia, Yo No Sé Si Existe. I don't know if you exist. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. And we played that song. It was recorded in 1925 as a teaser to talk about President Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court, Sonia Sotomayor.
Now, first I want to say my reaction. I was, have to say, disappointed. I was rooting for Diane Wood, a home in our home court here, Seventh Circuit in the Wisconsin District. And Sotomayor is going to be the sixth Roman Catholic appointment to the Supreme Court. And I think that's a bit much. We have a 9-member court. We already have 5 members who are Catholic-dominated.
You don't think there should be affirmative action for Catholics?
And I realize to be Hispanic in this country, probably you're going to be Roman Catholic. I'm not for quotas. You know, I wouldn't say no more Catholics, but I just think it's a little insensitive. And, you know, where's the secular? Where's, you know, we have one Jewish for sure, or do we have two? I mean, why don't we have a little more concern
about
demographics?
What are Catholics in the population? About 20%?
24%.
Okay.
And they do tend to dominate also in Congress. They are a larger percentage than their proportion in the population. So I'm not quite sure what's going on there. And of course, we don't know what her own views are. She was Catholic educated through high school and then went on to Princeton and Yale.
And there are some liberal Catholics.
Yes, you know, there are.
We can't pray, but we can hope.
And the highest percentage of members of the Freedom From Religion Foundation are ex-Catholics, of course. And so that's fine, but I'm a little concerned. And also, I did hear a lot of people, including Barack Obama, saying that he wasn't going to just appoint a woman. He was going to appoint the most qualified person. And to that I say bosh, because we only have one woman out of nine on the Supreme Court. Of course we needed another woman.
What do they have in Canada?
In Canada, the Supreme Court there is a nine-member court, and there are five women, and one of them is the Chief Justice. So we are so behind the times in the United States. So of course, we not only need Sotomayor, but we need some more women on the court for the upcoming vacancies. And we'll just have to wait and see.
What do you know about her views on state church separation? Is
there was one bad decision from the early 90s, I believe, at a federal court level where she ruled against Cross Plains, New York, which didn't want to put up
a menorah, right?
A menorah that was contested, and it was in a park, and she said that had to go up. And of course, there's a lot of bad crush decisions, and she may have been basing it on that, but we are getting very murky with that. And she also did not find standing for a pro-choice group that was challenging the Mexico City bans. So we'll just have to see. We don't know enough about it, but we do know, as Rachel Maddow on Air America has pointed out, that she was not she's a centrist, more to the conservative side than the very liberal. And I am disappointed in that, because we clearly need someone to counter the weight of those four right-wingers, Scalia et al., on the Supreme Court.
Let's hope that during the hearings that she gets some good questioning about her views on state church separation and women's rights.
More than that, we really need to know a little bit more about her philosophy on everything, including separation of church and state. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio over Air America. Stay tuned. In a few minutes, we'll have Steve Benson on the phone to talk about why he left the Mormon Church, became an atheist.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker.
And we have on the phone with us from Phoenix, Stephen Benson, or we like to call Heathen Stephen Benson. Steve is the Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist for the Arizona Republic. He's the grandson of Ezra Taft Benson, who was Secretary of Agriculture, who then became the Mormon Pope, the president of the Mormon Church. Steve said he was a born-in-the-bed Mormon. He's gone from Latter-day Saint to Latter-day Ain't. And Steve and I will be teaming up together to do a reprise of our show, Tunes and Tunes, at the 4th of July Free Thought Festivities in the heart of the Bible Belt in Alabama at Lake Hypatia. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Annie. How are you doing?
Hello.
I'll be seeing you soon in a few days. We got a lot of work to do, don't we?
We do. I get you coming to Tempe, Arizona to talk to a like-minded group of ne'er-do-wells and independent thinkers. This has got to stop.
And to do our show. Well, tell our listeners before we talk to you a little more, but what is Tunes and Tunes?
Well, this started out as an explosive idea, so to speak, TNT, as you'd like to call it in our email, where we combined and have gone around the country your wonderful piano tinklings with my primitive cartoon doodlings.
And for tinklings and reason, we should have called it tinklings and doodlings.
Oh, it sounds like kids who need a diaper change. But and for some reason it works. What happened was I'd seen you, give your presentation when I was asked to speak at the Freedom From Religion Foundation National Conference. And I thought, we could probably work something out here where we do this on the road kind of, comedy routine. And what better way to deal with religion than through comedy? Because if you look up the word religion in Webster's, the synonym is comedy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the same dictionary I have. It's funny bone.
Yeah, funny bone. So that's, and we went from there, and it's been great. I mean, gosh, we've been, from coast to coast and points in between.
Yes, and we've even played Vegas.
Yes, we played Vegas.
Twice.
And yeah, we've had Christopher Hitchens and as a warm-up act for us, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. He didn't stay to hear our show.
It's been great, and it's... It's like an anti-God, anti-tent revival in a way. You know
well,
what I mean?
It's a lot of fun.
I like to say that both of you are doing reverse penance.
Well, I think we're going to be doing that to our... Well, we'll have deathbed confessions that there's no such thing as penance.
Because you were both missionaries. And now you've seen
right.
the light.
How do you say...
I was in Japan trying to convert
Shintos or Buddhists?
Japanese to Mormonism. And I guess Dan was in, Mexico both trying times. To convert Mormons to Christianity?
Trying to convert Catholics to Christians. How do you say God loves you in Japanese?
Kamisama wa nato...
Did it work?
God loves you.
No,
one of my first contacts in Japan, now keep in mind I was there in 1975.
As a Mormon missionary.
Yeah, 73 to 75. This is 30 years after the bombing of Japan, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and points in between. Anyway, I had delivered a pamphlet at the door to a Japanese gentleman, and it showed the typical blonde-haired, blue-eyed Mormon Jesus, you know, and the caption was, you know, the restored church, because the Mormons believe that the Mormon church is the restored church of God, which supposedly fell away during the Dark Ages and became lost, and Joseph Smith, the 14-year-old ne'er-do-well, treasure seeker and folk tale teller, was visited by God, Jesus Christ, and angels, and came up with the Mormon church. But anyway, I gave this pamphlet to him, and he scowled at us and indicated he wasn't interested. Cause you're there with your buddy. You're teamed up as two missionaries. So I'm walking away from the door down this long sidewalk on this muggy Okinawa afternoon. This guy comes running after me with the pamphlet after we'd given it to him. We'd been polite and given him this pamphlet, and he starts screaming at me, "I hate Christ! I hate Christ!" In English.
In English?
I mean, it was a come-to-Jesus moment for me.
Maybe Christ dropped the bomb. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Do you have that sound effect?
Harry Truman invoked God when that one of the...
No, that's a little too realistic there.
Yeah.
So what happened? You, for a long time, you were this conservative editorial cartoonist for the Arizona Republic.
I think I beg to differ. I think you were more than conservative.
Well, yeah. I mean, I remember years ago, before we even knew each other on a personal level, Annie Laurie wrote me this letter from the foundation.
Well, you were taking swipes at secular humanists.
That's right.
Yeah, you know. I was taking swipes at sexy humanists. She read it wrong. But yeah, she wrote me a letter, and I wrote her a snippy defensive response. But you know, I guess she had found like a chink in my armor. And from there on, I went from born in the bed Mormon to eventually born in the head atheist.
So it also,
okay, well, I'll take the credit.
Yeah. Wow. But she was very polite. Annie Laurie is very polite, and as she deconstructs and destroys the very foundation of people's lives. I hope she feels good about that.
So today you're kind of the token liberal then there at the paper. Is that right?
Well, we have a couple of forward-thinking, progressive writers on our staff. But as an editorial cartoonist, you're supposed to be a forward-thinking iconoclast that goes after everybody and everything. Editorial cartoonists are, by tradition, by history, questioners of the established order. And we don't care who's in power, although, you know, we should have some kind of central core of beliefs. But we really don't care who's in power, because if the government's in power, there's bound to be abuse. And particularly private organizations that are wedded to the government, and the government and, you know, the church and the state in this case, washing each other's hands for their own particular advancement, is a particularly potent, dangerous, and toxic mix. That's why I think that nationalism combined with theology is probably the most potent, dangerous brew that humans have ever concocted.
Now, Steve, earlier in the show, you didn't hear it, but we talked about the Irish scandals and the report that came down last week. And you didn't do a cartoon, but you told us an idea you had.
Right. I didn't do a cartoon because I was on vacation. But I'm thinking about doing a cartoon where you have this this arm labeled, you know, Catholic, Irish Catholic pedophilia priest problem or something, and it's resting on the shoulder of this frightened, bug-eyed little kid who's weeping in fear, and the caption is, "When Irish eyes are crying."
Well, that's a good cartoon. You have to do
it. We could do that in the show. I could think of some music that goes with that.
Yeah, like a funeral dirge or something.
Yeah.
Something spiritual.
So it seems like the Irish Republic typifies what you were just saying, the harm of church and state united.
Absolutely. In fact, in 1993, when through a clerical error I won the Pulitzer Prize, one of my cartoons that were submitted for examination by the board was on the burgeoning Catholic priest pedophilia scandal in the United States. Now, at that point, it was just pennies. You know, like $400 million had been paid out. You know, now dioceses are closing down, and you know, and the Pope is relegated to one set of Dorothy Ruby Red slippers and a couple of pointed caps. I mean, he's had to cut down on his
Gucci
clothing
shoes.
Allowance.
Yeah.
But it's been a very touching, very controversial issue for years, and I'm still getting on occasion. I drew this cartoon back in 1993, and I'm still getting readers with long memories who somehow complain that this is an unfair attack on the Catholic Church, which has been historically involved in immoral, concerted efforts to conspire in covering up criminal acts against parishioners, and in particular against, minor children.
When you did that cartoon, you didn't describe that cartoon for our listeners. Could you, the cartoon?
Well, what it had is it had a couple kids, grade school looking kids, walking down the street past the Catholic Church. And the sign on the marquee was, suffer the little children. And standing on the steps of the parish, waving at them sweetly, was a Catholic cleric, dressed up with the backwards collar and the cross. And he's looking at them, and in his thought, and he has a thought bubble above his head. He's not saying anything, but he's thinking. There's the image of the kids walking away from him, but they don't have any clothes on.
Oh, they're smiling. Naked. In his thought bubble, they're naked.
In the thought bubble. Hey, do I have to draw you a picture?
Now, Steve, that cartoon was huge controversy, not just to the Arizona Republic, but that was like a national controversy for a while.
It did create some controversy, yes. And the local archbishop, who eventually was convicted of a hit-and-run fatality and covering it up, wrote to complain about it. In fact, he would write to my editor and call me the golden hair boy who was protected by the powers that be at the Arizona Republic. Well, this bishop just was not used to having secular criticism of the criminal activities of his organization. And I don't know what his problem with that was, but apparently he didn't like that. He was used to having it his way. And this is, when it becomes safe in society to criticize religion for not only being ludicrous, but for being dangerous, for being in some respects criminal in its enterprises, then we've truly reached a state of higher evolution.
No,
we had a column in our paper last week by Charlotte Allen, who was complaining that atheists bore her, and that we ought to get over our smug self-righteousness and take believers seriously. I'm supposed to take a belief system seriously that believes that rotting corpses can rejuvenate themselves after 3 days, mm-hmm. that donkeys can talk in human tongue according to the Old Testament, and that people can walk on water, and they want to be taken seriously? My goodness.
Well, we have to take a break here. Before we do, we want to hear a little bit of the Salt Lake City Blues, which is a song that you and I wrote for one of our shows that we might do again in Lake Hypatia.
It took 20 minutes to put this together with no divine inspiration. Now, you go figure that out.
I'm going to Salt Lake City, Salt Lake City, here I come. I'm going to Salt Lake City, Salt Lake City, here I come. They got some real peculiar people there, and I'm gonna meet me some. Standing on the corner of Temple and Main. Yeah, I'm standing on the corner of Temple and Main, with my decaffeinated beverage and 17 fiancés.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We're talking with atheist and former Mormon, the irreverent cartoonist Steve Benson. And we'll be right back after this break for more Free Thought Radio.
Beware of Dogma.
Say you want to join the Boy Scouts of America?
Young man!
Did you say you're a scout? I say,
young man!
If you're gay, then watch out! I say,
young man!
In the new BSA, there is no way for you to stay,
young man!
Do you trust in the Lord? If not,
young man!
You'll be tossed overboard, they might tell you that all boys are allowed, but the out crowd's not the in crowd.
Why, oh, I'm why, oh, Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and that is Why BSA, co-written by my host Dan Barker and Steve Benson with the for their inimitable, irreverent look at the news, religion and the news, Tunes and Tunes, which they'll be performing at Lake Hypatia, Alabama at the 4th of July. More information at ffrf.org. We have Steve on the phone with us from Phoenix, where he is editorial cartoonist at the Arizona Republic. And Steve, during the break, you were telling us about the endangered species editorial cartoonists are becoming.
Well, you know, they're part of a whole group of species that are becoming endangered. And these species are journalists and editors.
Are you a dodo bird then, Steve?
I'm a soaring eagle, as John Ashcroft used to sing in his hymns. This is a real challenge because as the economy has hit sectors across the country from coast to coast, newspapers large and small, regardless of ideology on their editorial pages, liberal, conservative, are feeling the pinch. Advertisers are going out of business or cutting way back, and that's the lifeblood of newspapers. And so they're cutting. Plus, they're cutting costs wherever they can. Investigative reporting teams are going down. Reporters who are covering, you know, essential beats are being laid off.
And you were telling us how many editorial cartoonists were there in the 1980s?
Well, in our heyday, the Association of American Editorial Cartoonists had hundreds of members. And we're now at a point where in the last several months we've lost 24. And we're down to about 85 employed editorial cartoonists at, when I say employed, at newspapers around the country, or some of them have gone completely to the web or to animation or started their own sites. Now, the trouble with what's happening is newspapers, along with editorial cartoonists, you know, who work for them. By the way, Ben Franklin was an editorial cartoonist. He had his own newspaper and did cartoons against the Crown that were used during the Revolutionary War. Paul Revere was an editorial cartoonist. But newspapers have been an essential check and balance in our system of government for the last 200-plus years. And without newspapers to call public officials to account, I think we're under severe threat of losing our precious freedoms. You've got to have a constant pushback from the people through a free and unfettered press.
Okay, but if
I don't think the newspapers are going to go completely out of existence, but they're going to have to adapt or die, the old Darwinian approach to, you know, survival of the fittest. But a lot of people are going to the net now for free news.
If they do and, go, though, then we'll always have the Book of Mormon, though. We can always have that to read.
Well, yes, of course. Comic relief, I think it would be. But
we're out of time here, Steve, but I just wanted to ask you really quickly, part of your deconversion freed you to go after your own church. There was a whole series of months or years there when you were actually not attacking just the government, but the Mormon hierarchy and all of the cover-ups there as well.
Well, in a nutshell, the church was lying about the actual physical and mental health of my grandfather, who was supposedly the head of the church and receiving daily revelation for not only the Mormon church, but for the world in general, when in fact he had suffered cerebral hematomas, you know, strokes, blood clots, had a heart attack, and was declining. And the Mormon church, secretly, without informing its members, had power transferred from him to his counselors, to his assistants, by a signature machine that mimicked his signature. And they were lying about his actual state of health. But this is important from the Mormon church. Their whole history has been one of falsification and fabrications and exaggerations. But they claim that they have a unique channel to God through a modern-day living Moses-like prophet. Well, when the Moses-like prophet, i.e. my grandfather or everybody or whoever else is the ostensible church head, begins to falter, then what has happened is that the church begins to obfuscate and actually dissemble about his state of health.
We're out of time,
Steve, it was a pleasure. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Dan Barker. We've been talking with Steve Benson, the former Mormon, the editorial cartoonist of the Arizona Republic.
Go to ffrf.org/radio to hear all of our shows archived and sign up for the podcast.
You can phone 1-800-335-4021 to join FFRF to get a free copy of our newspaper, or go to ffrf.org. We'll be back next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope so.